This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dan Novak and Gregory Stockel. Later, you will hear this week's Higher Education Report. After that, Anna Mateo joins us for her weekly Words and Their Stories feature. But first, Brian Lynn has this story about how hot, dry weather is hurting the grape and olive crops in a well-known part of Italy. This program is a repeat of last Sunday's show.
Farmers in Italy's famous Tuscany area are struggling to save grape and olive crops threatened by a heat wave and drought conditions. A lack of rainfall since spring has even affected plants that traditionally grow well in hot and dry weather. In San Cassiano, in Val di Pesa, near Florence, olive trees line the hillsides. But farmers say the dry soil is preventing the trees from producing the normal amount of fruit. Tuscany is famous around the world for its olive oil and wine from grapes. But growers in the area say dry, hot weather has recently had a major effect on the crops and harmed production. "We had a very dry spring with practically no rain from March to today," olive grower Filippo Legnaioli told Reuters. He said this year's heat and lack of water happened during an important time when the flowers were changing to fruit. "Without water, many flowers fall to the ground before they can produce fruit." Legnaioli said this year's oil production could be reduced by up to 60%. Other olive growers have decided to change some of their farming methods. They have added extra watering systems to make up for the lack of rainfall and hot temperatures. Farmer Luigi Colonnacci told Reuters the rescue watering methods aim to protect the production of olives on the plants. "The system works through a pipe placed beneath the trees to release small amounts of water." Colonnacci's farm has also been using a white netting material to protect the plants from olive fruit flies, whose larvae feed on the fruit of the trees. While the farmers say that problem is not directly related to the drought, it can also cause big crop losses. "The effects of climate change have not only affected production and plants, but have also created new areas in Italy where crops can be grown. A few years ago, olive farms were mainly found in hot and dry areas such as Sicily. Now areas such as Val d'Aosta in the far north of Italy, which is famous for its ski resorts and mountains, can produce their own oil." Climate change is also affecting wine crops in Tuscany. In Chianti, for example, September is normally the month for the yearly grape harvest. but with continued high temperatures, many grapes are ripening earlier than expected. We have smaller grapes, and we expect the number of grapes to be lower than the average of the last few years, said Sergio Zingarelli, who helps lead a local grape farming group. In addition to the reduction in grapes caused by the current heat wave, wine growers also have to deal with other extreme weather events. Paolo Cianferoni is the owner of Chianti's Caparsa Winery. He said a hailstorm recently destroyed 40% of grapes in the area. He told Reuters, "Luckily, the quality of the grapes has not been affected, so we'll see what happens." I'm Brian Lynn.
African countries have reclaimed many historic objects, called artifacts, from European countries. Recently, Nigeria and Germany signed a deal for the return of hundreds of artifacts known as the Benin Bronzes. The deal followed French President Emmanuel Macron's decision last year to sign over 26 pieces known as the Abomey treasures. Those are valuable artworks from the 19th century Dahomey Kingdom in present-day Benin. But many artifacts are still missing, and some countries have also been resistant to returning them. One such object is an eight-legged seat from the Old Kingdom in Uganda. The important artifact now sits at a museum thousands of kilometers away in Britain. The wooden seat is housed at the University of Oxford. It is one of at least 279 objects there, taken from the Bunyoro-Kitara kingdom during colonial times. Oxford has fought off attempts to have the artifact taken back to Uganda, saying it was donated to the university. Apollo John Rwamparo is a deputy prime minister of Uganda. He urged the British to do like the French and the Germans have done and return the artifacts. Ugandan officials are preparing to meet in November with the University of Cambridge in Britain. The school has an unknown number of artifacts from Africa. It recently returned a bronze cockerel to Nigeria. But London's British Museum has been hard to negotiate with, said Rose Mwanja Nkale. She is Uganda's commissioner for museums and monuments. "We can start with those that are willing to cooperate. It is not useful to fight these people." The British Museum holds a large collection from across Africa. It is protected by a 1963 law preventing the museum from returning artifacts unless the objects are considered unfit or useless. Some African officials believe that law is increasingly weak, as other nations have been more open to returning them. Abba Issa Tijani is Director General of Nigeria's National Commission for Museums and Monuments. He said Nigeria is pressuring Britain and other countries to change the laws permitting the return of disputed collections. But he expressed concern that while some countries are starting to open up, in Britain such efforts have not even started. Many of the artifacts from Africa cannot even be found. That led to an organization started by late Congolese art collector Sindika Dakolo. It offers to buy stolen African art from collections in foreign countries. By 2020, when Dakolo died, his group had successfully recovered 15 items. However, recovery of artifacts remains a struggle for African governments, and the African Union has put the return of stolen cultural property up for discussion. The Union aims to soon have a common policy on the issue. Zimbabwe has pushed for the return of about 3,000 artifacts from Britain. They include weapons as well as the skulls of fighters who fought against colonialism. Their heads were cut off and shipped away as war prizes. Talks between British and Zimbabwean officials have produced no big agreement. But the issue is so important for Zimbabwe that President Emmerson Mnangagwa last year suggested an exchange. Zimbabwe would return the remains of colonialist Cecil Rhodes, who is buried in the country. In return, Zimbabwe would receive the remains of the fighters. Rwanda recently made an agreement with its former colonial occupier, Belgium. The deal included the sharing of digital copies of over 4,000 songs and other recordings kept at the Royal Museum for Central Africa outside Brussels. But the location of the remains of one of Rwanda's last kings, Yuhi Musinga, is a serious issue in the East African country. Many Rwandans believe the body of Musinga, who resisted the Belgians and died in Congo, was sent to Belgium. Antoine Niagahene is a professor of history at Rwanda's Gitwe University. He said there should be some justice in that case. "We were robbed of our cultural values, and, as you know, a people without roots are a people without a soul," he said. I'm Dan Novak.
Space scientists have observed what they believe is the most massive known example of an object called a neutron star. It has been called a black widow since it gained much of its mass by taking it from another star which it orbits. The star recently discovered by astronomers turns more than 700 times every second. Its mass is 2.35 times greater than our sun. The researchers said the star is close to the highest possible mass for an object of its kind. If it were any more massive, it would collapse into a massive black hole. The researchers published their findings recently in Astrophysical Journal Letters. A neutron star is the dense, collapsed center or core of a massive star that exploded in an event called a supernova. This neutron star is a kind that is highly magnetized, called a pulsar. From Earth, pulsars appear to give off light repeatedly in short moments, like a lighthouse. Only one other neutron star is known to turn more quickly. Roger Romani is director of Stanford University's Center for Space Science and Astrophysics in the U.S. state of California. He helped write the research. Romani said, "The heavier the neutron star, the denser the material in its core." Romani added, "So as the heaviest neutron star known, this object presents the densest material in the observable universe. If it was any heavier, it should collapse to a black hole, and then the stuff inside would be behind the event horizon, forever sealed off from any observation. Scientists use the term event horizon to describe a point close to a black hole beyond which nothing can escape, including light. Romani said, "Since we don't yet know how matter works at these densities, the existence of this neutron star is an important probe of these physical extremes." The star is officially known as PSR J0952-0607. It is about 20,000 light years from Earth. A light year is the distance light travels in a year. The researchers studied it using the Keck 1 telescope in the state of Hawaii. Stars that are about 8 or more times the sun's mass change the chemical hydrogen into heavier elements. When they build up about 1.4 times the mass of our sun in the element iron, their core collapses into a neutron star. A neutron star is very small, about the size of a city, but within that small area, it holds more mass than our sun. The astronomers call this kind of star a black widow. The name comes from a kind of spider. The black widow female is known to eat the male after mating. Astronomers call star systems with related qualities spider binaries. The star is believed to have started as a neutron star with the usual mass, about 1.4 times that of our sun. But its gravitational pull took material from the star in its system. That appears to have caused it to gain mass nearing the physical limit. Beyond that limit, scientists say, the star should collapse into a black hole. Black holes are the densest of all known objects. The other star in the system has lost about 98% of its mass to the Black Widow star. It remains about 20 times the mass of our solar system's largest planet, Jupiter, but far less massive than a normal star. I'm Gregory Stockel.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. Next, you will hear from Anna Mateo with this week's episode of Words and Their Stories. But first, the Higher Education Report. Students seeking college degrees in sociology and psychology at the University of Nebraska at Omaha are required to take a class in mathematical statistics. Statistics is a kind of math that studies numbers that represent pieces of information. Many of the students say they feel anxious about the statistics class. In other words, the class causes them worry and concern. Two University of Nebraska professors sought to understand their students' anxieties or fears. They hoped to be able to help educators improve their teaching of statistics and lessen students' worries. Kelly MacArthur teaches statistics in the Department of Sociology, and Jonathan Santo teaches the class in the Department of Psychology. They spoke with VOA Learning English about their study and its surprising results. The two researchers explored several areas of the relationship between statistics anxiety and classroom results. They looked at how anxiety levels changed from the start of the class to the end. They also looked at how those levels related to exam results, and they explored the role that gender plays in statistics anxiety and actual class results. MacArthur and Santo found that in general, female students were much more anxious about the class than males were. Yet, based on their study, women did not need to be as worried as they were. The researchers found that the female students scored 10% higher than male students on the final exam. Males and females had scored more similarly on exams at the start of the term. MacArthur and Santo studied 111 students who answered a series of questions at the beginning and end of the school term. They wanted to see how worried their students were about the class and then follow their progress over a number of months. At the start, the professors said more men than women answered the questions confidently, but by the end, the number of women who were confident about their abilities increased. Their exam scores rose too. Why is this? Frances Anderson is one of Santo's former students. She is working on an advanced degree in educational leadership. She remembers being fearful of statistics classes, even though she had a history of doing well in math classes.
After the first, I think it was one or two lectures, I felt completely incompetent. I felt like all of the other students knew what was going on. I didn't know anything.
Anderson said she thought she would fail the class. She even called some friends crying, saying, "There's no way that I have the ability to do this." After the concerns at the start, Anderson said she made friends with other students who offered help. She also spent one-on-one time with Santo going over the material and followed issues of interest so she could ask deeper questions that helped her understand the class better. But the biggest reason she sought extra help, she did not want to be seen as an imposter, someone who did not belong in the class.
I think it's almost like someone's going to catch you, and so you're trying to work to stay ahead of that. So it's sort of like, well, I know if I just stay like 1 foot ahead, it won't be possible.
Anderson said her fear of being seen as not good enough made her work very hard. MacArthur and Santo wrote about their study in the Journal of Statistics and Data Science Education. They noted that problems with statistics classes can present a barrier to graduation. Santo said the level of concern about statistics has always surprised him. He said he often tries to let his students know that math in statistics classes is more practical or useful in everyday life. But he said it is important for students to accept that they are dealing with math questions that do not have clear answers. That is different from other kinds of math problems. Santo said students are used to doing work that results in a right answer. But in a statistics class for psychology or sociology, they should accept the idea that research data does not always produce clear results. Santo also said statistics professors should find ways to make students feel comfortable asking for help.
For these students, if they're stressed out to the point that they're avoiding it or avoiding talking to their teachers or avoiding asking for help, that's going to have a long-term impact on their grades.
Anderson said sometimes students set up roadblocks for themselves. In this case, she said, The students create a barrier to success by thinking they are not good at math. Anderson offered suggestions for people to get past those roadblocks. Ask questions and find other people who are facing similar roadblocks. The only unsuccessful students I've ever seen are those that don't ask questions, Anderson said. I'm Dan Friedel.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. As humans, we have emotional states, also called moods. Sometimes we feel happy and sometimes sad. Other times we may feel angry or anxious or excited. Well, moods are not just for individuals. Groups of people can also share a collective mood. On today's show, we talk about an expression that describes ways we understand the general mood of a group of people. That expression is to read the room. When you read the room, you use your powers of observation to learn the general mood or emotional state of people in a particular setting. You may then act in a way that is similar to that mood. You match it. Let's say you are in a silly mood, laughing a lot and making jokes. Then you enter a serious work meeting. You may need to read the room and change your behavior. Here's another example. If I need to bring up a serious issue with a group of friends, I will read the room first. If everyone is having a good time and the issue is not urgent, I will wait. You can tell someone else to read the room if they seem clueless about the mood of a group of people. It is a way of expressing to that person that they are behaving incorrectly or inappropriately. Used this way, it can either be funny or insulting, depending on the situation and how we say the phrase. Let's say you are at a dinner party. People are seated around a table, enjoying good food and conversation. Then your friend Betsy brings up a very serious topic, like a historic battle where many people died. Suddenly, the tone changes. The atmosphere goes from happy to serious. You could say, "Betsy, read the room. No one wants to talk about that right now." Or I could say to someone later, "Betsy needs to learn how to read the room. She brought down the mood of the party with her talk of war and death." The expression "read the room" is all about being observant. Reading the room is a skill. People who can read the room know the right atmosphere, tone, and mood, and are able to fit in. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world.